Think You're So Criminal. Written by Ghost Runner. Read by Silvercatch 1620. Summary. Anna de Corbray sits down across from Tommy and he realizes two things in rapid succession. One, he still hates her. And Cobra. Two, no member of the G.I. Joes or the Arashikage will ever have a chance like this again. Author's notes. I borrowed some characters from G.I. Joe Retaliation. Basically, I just needed some named Joes and Cobras to stand around. See the end of the work for more notes. Anna de Corbray sits down across from Tommy, and he realizes two things in rapid succession. One, he still hates her, and Cobra. Two, no member of the G.I. Joes or the Arashikage will ever have a chance like this again. She's offering him an army with a smirk, winking at him over the edge of her glasses. Repulsive woman. She holds out her glass to him, and he raises his, takes a sip without toasting her. I'm listening. Akiko calls Snake Eyes back from looking for Tommy, shows him what they've got. A single coded message. A clue that will unravel into a thwarted Cobra plot. One tiny thread in a tapestry of a plan to remake the world. Okay. Snake says. Okay, I guess we're doing this. Major O'Hara gives him a confused look when he shows up masked and silent to stand with the Joes, but it's not like she can ask him any questions. He's not giving answers anymore. 6 years, 210 missions, 4 barely avoided apocalypses, and 2 high-security prison breaks later. You know, Snake Eyes says, mostly because he knows the sound of his voice will shock almost everyone in the room, you guys have cost me a lot over the years. What's the point of keeping a 6-year vow of silence if you can't bamboozle your friends and enemies? Flint says, did Snake just talk? Snake reaches up and unclips his mask, and now even Destro and Cobra Commander have stopped making their latest doomsday speech and are also staring at him. It's not like he never takes it off. That would be really impractical. But he doesn't do it often, and certainly never in the field. Every Joe except Roadblock and Jay have abandoned weapons discipline and are just standing around pointing their guns at the ground, unsure what's happening. He makes a mental note to run more psychological warfare drills at a later date. He runs one hand through his hair to ruffle it back up properly, and off to the side he hears Flint make a short, strangled noise, like his world is collapsing, and also he's seriously questioning his sexuality. Sweet boy. I mean, he continues, I never thought this would work. Certainly not for this long. I bet Akiko some serious money on that assumption. Money I don't actually have, so now I'm in real trouble if she really expects to collect. He levels a mock disapproving look at the various Cobra henchmen who are all staring at him, and he's lining up a speech about the evils of gambling when Cobra Commander suddenly recovers his equanimity. Cold as ice, that guy. What is the point? He rasps in his strange, synthetic voice. Of this little diatribe! Snake beams at him. He's no longer accustomed to controlling his facial expressions, and he doesn't feel particularly inclined to try right now anyway. The point, he says brightly, is that you all just made the fatal mistake of taking your eyes off of a ninja. Everyone looks confused. It's actually Roadblock who leans sideways a little, without turning or lowering his gun, bless, and says, Buddy, everybody has their eyes on you. Oh, I wasn't talking about me, Snake says cheerfully. He tips his chin up to indicate the doomsday device behind the staring cobras. That ninja. Cobra Commander, quickest off the mark, turns just in time to take one of Storm Shadow's swords straight through the chest. Destro, the Baroness, and the handful of other cobras are frozen, staring again. In his other hand, Storm has the main, irreplaceable power coil that runs this week's world-destroying weapon. He tosses it casually straight at Roadblock, an easy underhand pass that a very surprised Block scoops neatly out of the air. Snake puts a shuriken into the unprotected back of Destro's neck, rather than miss the rare opportunity. Storm rips the sword out of the already collapsing Cobra Commander and swings the pommel into the Baroness's face, knocking her back into the controls of the containment field. As the laser grid between the Cobras and the Joes flickers and dies, Snake throws his own sword into a power conduit, and Storm jumps, uses the blade as a springboard, twists in midair to pull it free, cuts the failsafe self-destruct in half, and lands on the dais, steps with a sword in each hand and a very small smile on his face. Tommy, and it is Tommy now, brings Snake his sword back, ignoring the rest of the Joes who are mostly staring open-mouthed at him. Snake ignores the proffered weapon, strips the glove from his right hand, and holds it out to Tommy. He gets a look for it, a you're-such-a-sap look. But at heart, Tommy is just as dramatic as he is, and it's worth the ribbing to watch his brother switch sword hands, pull off his glove with his teeth, and finally clasp his hand again. There are about 40 people in this room staring at them, despite Roadblock barking orders to round up the remaining cobras. But Snake can't resist, brings his free hand around the back of Tommy's neck, tugs him forward to press their foreheads together. He feels a little instinctive, tense resistance. They've attacked each other a lot in the last few years. And then a shudder goes through the other man. An earthquake miles below the ocean. Lenikerukudasai, he murmurs, his eyes falling shut. Tommy smiles. He can hear it. Your Japanese is still terrible. He's never learning the proper pronunciation. Not if it makes Tommy smile and tease him like everything might be all right. Let's go home, he says in English, straightening, not letting go, shaking Tommy a little with his grip. He gets a smirk for it, one of Storm Shadow's mocking eyebrow raises. You have a home now, do you? He's teasing, but Snake answers him seriously, still not letting go, still not caring that they have an audience. Yeah, he says, the one you gave me. Something complicated goes through Tommy's face. Longing and dread, and so unlike Storm Shadow's perpetual sarcastic unconcern. Let's go home, Tommy. And Thomas Arashikage closes his eyes and nods. They manage to leave the Joes with only one slightly awkward conversation, which Snake puts an end to with his new willingness to speak. Block, he says, cutting off a line of questioning he doesn't feel like answering right now. I value our friendship and the work we've done together, but... I'm sorry, is this freaking you out? Snake gestures vaguely at his bare face. No, Roadblock lies, just as Flint says, whatever I would have guessed you'd be like talking, cheery and sarcastic would not have been it. Behind Snake, Tommy rolls his eyes so hard Snake can almost hear it. I take this seriously, Block, Snake picks back up. But don't ask me to choose between the Joes and my family. You won't like the outcome. Roadblock only tips his head toward Tommy, who is saying to Flint, you were never that good. I've been feeding you people intel for years. And says, he's your family now? Snake looks him in the eye, something no one is used to from him anymore. He always was. Akiko has sent the Arashikage jet, and Snake could kiss her, if it wouldn't cost him his life, because it's worth all the expensive Zen elegance to see Tommy settle ever so slightly back into who he really is. The edge of Storm Shadow's mania is still there. It may never leave. 6 years in deep cover is a long time, and Tommy's always had that dangerous intensity to some degree. But still, it's something to watch him smooth his hands along the wood grain of the tables, shift his shoulders back against the leather seats. Not as though he hasn't been on fancy jets in the last 6 years. But this fancy jet is his. Was his. My grandmother, he says, starts to say, looks at Snake like he's still not used to seeing his face, hearing his voice. Snake doesn't like getting that look from him. She's fine, he says. That gets him another look. Okay, she's 90, but mostly she's fine. She's as eager as any of us to have you home. Tommy closes his eyes like that hurts. As any of us, he murmurs to himself. Snake leans in, not liking that dark touch of Storm Shadow's sarcasm in Tommy's voice. We all want you back, Tommy. He doesn't open his eyes, but he's listening. Serious question, Snake says, just to get Tommy to open one eye, look mock disbelieving. Does it matter what the rest of the world thinks you did, as long as the Arashikage always knew the truth? Tommy looks briefly gut-punched by that, and then thoughtful, but he doesn't answer. It's raining when they touch down in Tokyo. Snake isn't sure that it helped. Everyone bowing to Tommy as he walked into the castle. Hard Master and Blind Master clapping him on the shoulders. Akiko smiling through tears, pressing her forehead to the floor. His grandmother dropping her walking stick to raise him from his bow, touch his hair, his face, beaming with joy and pride. Good, certainly, but he found it overwhelming and it wasn't even aimed at him. Given that Tommy is now sitting on the edge of the serpent pit, one knee drawn up, one foot dangling out over a deadly drop to judgment, he's guessing he felt something similar in the full court press of welcome.
Do you think it would end my life?
He asks when Snake is still 20 feet from him and moving silently. Ninjas have different ideas about personal space and privacy. Snake abandons sneaking and goes to sit beside him, dangling both knees over the edge of the pit into the darkness. I don't know, he says. The truth is he would not allow either of the remaining serpents to come within a hair's breadth of Tommy.
You must empty your heart.
Tommy makes a rough noise, derisive.
You sound like my grandmother, or Akiko.
He looks away from Snake into the darkness.
It is not that simple.
I didn't say it would be simple, brother, Snake says gently. This is what Akiko said to him while they watched Tommy walk in to see his grandmother alone. It will not be simple. 6 years is a long time to surround yourself with hatred. He may never manage to come back completely. He could tell Tommy this, but again, he's not certain it would help. And he's out of practice speaking his thoughts aloud. As if he's thinking the same thing, Tommy says,
An odd moment to choose to break such a solemn vow. A surprisingly effective distraction. But if it meant so little, why take it in the first place?
Snake looks at him sidelong in the dark forest. It meant a great deal, he says, and you know why. Tommy glances at him, away, reaches out and closes his hand over Snake's leg, above the knee.
I know, he says quietly, staring down into the dark pit where scales glide over stone. Thank you. Easier to preserve my cover if you couldn't be questioned. Easier for me as well. These past years were difficult enough. If you'd had to ask me to come home and I'd had to rebuke you.
He trails off. Snake says, ragged, raw-edged honesty. I would have begged. If it were real, if he'd had the chance, he couldn't have stopped himself. Tommy shudders again, and the hand on his thigh clenches tight. Snake digs his nails into his palms behind him to keep from reaching for Tommy. He isn't ready. This isn't the time. Instead, he says as lightly as possible, given that nothing between them has ever been light, "You know, I never apologized for what I did to get in here. Not to you." Tommy gives a short, sharp bark of laughter. "That was a long time ago, Snake. And buried now under so many other unforgivable things. I forgive you, if you need to hear it." "No," Snake says, clumsy with words now, always when it's important. "It matters, Tommy. Tommy." He waits for Tommy to look at him. Turning his head means he's leaning in close, eyes luminous in the lantern-lit dark. "I'm sorry." It hits Tommy like a blow almost never does, but Snake keeps going. 6 years of pleas and apologies and desperate truths crowding under his tongue. "You offered me a home and a name when I had neither. You offered me everything you had, and that was..." He gestures around them at the castle, the forest, the army. "You know, a lot." That gets him the ghost of a smile. "And instead, I chose hollow, pointless vengeance, and I knew it was wrong even as I chose it, and I knew it would break your heart." Tommy flinches, but he doesn't move his hand. Digs his nails in briefly, and Snake flexes into the touch, feeling that familiar, hot, bright need rise up in him. "Tommy, I am so sorry." Snake is cracking at the edges, accustomed to having a mask keep his composure for him. Beside him, Tommy fights for calm much more successfully. "That is a heavy weight to have carried all these years," he says. "Maybe the serpents would eat us both." And he stares meditatively down at 1,000 pounds of scales and fangs in a way Snake doesn't like. He can't control himself well enough yet to speak again, but he tilts his head to convey that he is listening, and hopefully that Tommy should under no circumstances consider going into the pit. "I got lost in it," Tommy confesses to him, soft. "Not the Cobra ideology, which doesn't make much sense and isn't terribly well thought out, but in the hatred, the rage, the ease of destruction." "That's not who you are," Snake manages to say. "Is it not?" Tommy muses. "I'm not sure." They sit silent for a time, watching the dark of the pit, the gentler dark of the forest. After a while, Tommy says, "Thank you." Snake looks a question at him. "For not giving up on me. If you did, don't tell me." "Never," Snake says, sharp. "But also, thank you for not offering me this all those years ago." All those years ago, Snake would have said, "Offer you what?" And Tommy would have just given him a look that said, "You know exactly what." And Snake would have known, but denied it. "Now," he says nothing, but in a way that means he understands and agrees. His silences have taken on a great deal of nuance.
"I think you knew," Tommy says quietly into the dark, "what I really wanted from you, with you, all those years ago, long before I knew it myself."
Snake again says nothing, because the answer is, "Yeah, probably."
"If you had offered me this, if you'd come to my rooms after training, put your hands on me, smirking and pretending to be casual."
Every inch of Snake feels like he's full of lightning.
"I thought about it," he says, rough.
"It's true.
Sounds like you thought about it too."
The hand Tommy has on him now is light as a dream, a ghost of a touch.
"If you'd given me this, I would have taken it," Tommy says, flat and direct, like the image of it isn't stopping Snake's heart. "And then when you'd betrayed us, you would have hated me forever," Snake says.
He knows. He knew it then.
"You could never have forgiven me, no matter the circumstances."
"No," Tommy agrees.
"So it is better that this never happened between us then."
"Sure, except I'm about to spontaneously combust or do something that'll seriously embarrass the giant snakes."
Tommy gives him Storm Shadow's smirk and moves his thumb slightly, almost a stroke. "I thought the elite G.I. Joes had more control over themselves," he murmurs.
Snake looks him in the eye, stone still under his hand, near invisible in the dark of the ancient forest fortress.
"Forget the Joes," he says, deliberate. "I am Arashikage."
Tommy sways with the force of this declaration, nearly into the serpent pit.
"I am yours," Snake has just told him. "You belong here, and I belong to you."
That surety of his place. He used to feel it every day of his life. He has missed it like air for all these years. It is fitting that Snake Eyes should be the one to offer it back to him.
He looks down into the pit, at the snakes below who will tell him when he has truly come home in his heart. "I'm not ready yet," he tells them, tells the man beside him.
Snake leans into him a little, still not touching, just reinforcing the solidity of his presence.
"I'll be here," he says,
"when you are."
The end.
Author's notes. No, you haven't written anything publishable for 100 years and then got sucker punched by codependent ninjas. Title is from Bad Guy by Billie Eilish, which I listened to over and over while writing. If I knew how to vid, this would be a vid.